Good evening and welcome to the Yellow Dog Sangha. We have a big group sitting at Wimberley tonight. It's nice. It's good to see you out there zoning. We appreciate you showing up. So what have we been talking about? Well, we've been talking about pointing ourselves towards some teachings that are very important to remember as we meditate. And they're called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And there's just so much to know. And we're on the fourth one where states of mind are discussed and taught. We have these minds along with these bodies, and they have to be known. It has to be known. It can cause us a lot of grief. So the mind, as I understand it, is a great servant, but an awful master. And because my mind has been and continues to be conditioned by, you know, just daily life, it's something that not only needs to be known, it needs to be managed. Because remember, we've talked about remembering, because one of the things that we forget, and that forgetfulness is in all of us. So remembering, reflecting is important. So remembering about our mind states, we just want to get to know them. We just want to see them clearly and see what we're saying to ourselves. And our sense of self comes from the mind. Wait a minute. The teachers say there is no self. Well, don't. You can argue that with the mind, but the mind is the sense of self. And that is our conditioning that we have accumulated over the years. And we've created it along the way without questioning, well, who am I really? And, of course, the journey begins. But Jack Kornfield reminds us that we are on a journey of a paradox. There's two parallels of spiritual quest that must be considered. We've talked about the no self led by the heart or spaciousness that we begin to touch in not just our meditation practice, but in stillness and being quiet. And then there's this healthy sense of self led by the mind, created by the mind, and led by the mind. So we begin to hear that the self is true, is real, but it's not true. And what makes it not true? Well, it's going to go with the mind and the body. You know, when we die, we give that up. And through our practice, we begin to see for ourselves that the mind kind of has a mind of its own. And after we've stopped fighting with it and begin to kind of understand it, then we create this balance of wisdom that enables the mind to support our effort in waking up. So self is real, so is the mind and the body, but it's not true because why? because it's temporary. It's fleeting. It will end for all of us. In the deepest sense, the self doesn't exist. Now that's Buddha Dharma. In the deepest sense, the self doesn't exist. But as you well know, human language isn't very good at describing the truth at the deepest level. So as a practical matter, we do use I, me, and mine, and all the other ways to identify ourselves and others. And so this sense of self just kind of gets established and gets pretty stubborn. But what happens is, and nothing's wrong with it, we just want to know this sense of self and to know that it's the ego. We know what the ego is. That's not anything new to us. So we have this ego that we are getting to know. And it arises each time when we identify with all the form of life, our body, our sensations, our feelings, our emotions, our mind, our mind states, then that enables us, or at least marks us with a sense of self that doesn't exist. And so we want to heal this sense of self without feeding the delusion of self. Now that's deep. That's deep, deep. We want to heal this sense of self, this ego, without feeding the delusion of the self, of the true self we're talking about, the spaciousness, who we really are. And we're more than this mind and body. We're more, we've touched that. So we have a sense of that. We have a sense of living in that paradox. And it's most confusing if there's not wisdom that comes along with it. So we want to heal the sense of self without feeding the delusion of the self. And we already know that we've been conditioned not to be very nice to ourselves. And it's kind of sad that that has to be a main course in this teaching, but it's a must until we see that we have this nobility about ourselves, because we do have a mind and a body. But somehow we've lost that touch of who we really are. So how to heal the sense of self? Well, Jack Kornfield says we do this with working with humility. Haven't you noticed all the great saints of the day, Pema Chodron, I was going to say Gandhi, he's not up today, but the Dalai Lama. Don't we pick up a sense of humility in just their presence? It's that childlike spaciousness. But this unconditional friendship and acceptance towards ourselves is really a prerequisite. We can find ourselves spinning our wheels when we don't respect this mind and body, or this form that we've been given, that is a necessary part of waking up to who we really are. We need both. And sometimes along the way, I know I've seen this happen throughout the 40 years I've been practicing, we try to get spiritual. because I, oops, you know, we don't have this mind and body, so I need to be spiritual. Well, you know, where does that take us? Well, I can tell you, it takes us nowhere, because yes, we are spiritual, but we're more than that if we're trying to wake up in the middle of a mind and body. It's just more complicated. So, and there's prerequisite. You know, I've said this before. Early on, we weren't privy to this deep wisdom, because the people in Asia kept it very, very secretive. Why? Well, because the wisdom of, we have to be ready to hear it. We have to be open to the possibility. And evidently, that's why we're all here. It is, we've opened to the possibility, and we have seen things are not quite as they appear. But it's not optional to not work on this sense of self and to get to know it in a friendly way. And it takes great humility to sit and allow the spiritual process of ripening to occur, for this to happen. Our sense of self, our egos, or just a set of thoughts that we've accumulated along the way. Okay, that's huge. That's the ego. We've got it all blocked in our mind frame, all blocked in who we are. And we have, along the years, say, oh, okay, that's me. Okay, that's me. Oh, I was mistaken. I think this is who I am. And unconsciously, we develop this sense of self, and it takes consciousness to begin to see it for what it is. Ego, sense of self. So our sense of self is there, and it will go along with the other parts of us when we leave. So it's like a familiar room built of thoughts. That's what your ego is. And we see the world through these windows. So it's that baggage, that perception, that we begin to study, because we know that our perception without wisdom and consciousness is distorted, even about ourselves, especially about ourselves. So we see the world through these windows, and nothing's wrong with it, but that's where we get trapped in our own suffering, because it's how we relate to all this phenomena of being a human being that causes the suffering. So we're secure. It gives us a sense of security to the extent that sometimes it inhibits us. We're afraid to venture outside of this made-up ego. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, that's not me. You know, how we talk to ourselves. And as Rumi says, we've created this prison without quite understanding that it happens. But guess what? We've knocked on the door of consciousness. So there's no turning back. It's not like all of a sudden you can forget this stuff once you've heard it. It just doesn't work that way. So we become secure in it, but to the extent that we're afraid, it scares us. It keeps us in a prison, and it keeps us from opening to all the wonderful possibilities and the magical part of life. And we somehow believe we need its specific thought to survive. We can survive very happily without another thought in our lives coming up. Think about that one. So the ego controls us through our fear of loss of identity. We think we are our egos. And we are. We are in a certain sense. But the ego's going to die with the rest of us. So, and to give up these thoughts, we panic, and I'm talking about myself, because what are we not annihilating? We're trying to annihilate, but we're really not. We're just trying to get to know and to relate it to someone that we have created virtually through our minds. And when this teaching is brought up and we open to the possibility, it's a wake-up call. And most of us have never opened to the possibility that the ego can be known. But we know, we meditate enough to know that we can see directly, experientially, how this mind and body works. Because without that knowledge, we are just going to ride the waves of conditioning, of habits. Okay, I know how you're going to relate to that or respond or react to that because you've done it a million times. Aren't you sick of it? I get so tired of my ego and my habits, you know, that I have to pull myself back and say, okay, wait a minute. These are precious tools for me to wake up. And they're heavy-duty tools, but they are precious tools that will help us wake up. So there is an alternative. We needn't destroy the ego to escape its tyranny. We know that. We need to know that we are infinitely, and we've touched this, more than our ego. And once we know this, we have the power to change the ego from prison to home base. That's the sacred pause. That comes up quite naturally when we dedicate ourselves to wanting to know the truth. So we are meditating, welcome home. Present living is home. And we begin through our own experiences, we begin to see how compelling that is in our lives. And again, we do this with respect for the nobility of an ordinary human being taking the steps toward awakening. We're noble. We create personalities of likes and dislikes, wants and don't wants, which is fine because, as I've said to you a million times, that's built into this system. But what's not built into this system is that there's a pause where the same old does not have to happen. And, that's where the shifts, you know. When we can pause and the meditation practice, the formal meditation practice on a daily basis leads us there to that sacred pause. We begin to have actually more space within even our own personality and ego. So when we like and dislike or we're not interested, that's nature. But what do we do from that point on? It's okay that you don't like something. It's okay that you like something. It's okay to have preferences. Nothing is wrong with preferences. But it's where we start our suffering. I like this. I want it. I need it. I need to do this in order to get it. I'm not going to let it go. I'm going to be thinking about it, and life's going to pass me by. And so there's an evolutionary occurrence in all of us as we see, hear, smell, feel, taste, and think. And we have this relationship with our six senses where we automatically are geared towards the like and the not like. But we have that wisdom. And we know that it can take us down either road. And what keeps us from going to the suffering path is wisdom. We know what to do. See how important the teachings are? And when we grab hold of our personal preferences and start adding thoughts and spin a story, woo, then that we create our own virtual reality. And we miss life. We miss life. And so we also know to rein on them. We've got these tools where we are recognizing what's going on in our lives all of a sudden. We're allowing it and we're investigating it in a way that we didn't know we could investigate. So the ego is real, but it's not true. We exist in these two worlds. That's very confusing. And this equanimity, that is always something that we have to remember. But on a basic molecular level, the cells in our bodies are always changing. As old cells die off, new ones are generated. And so nothing stays the same. We are changing faster than fast. We will not see and hear and smell and taste and think only do it once, one at a time. Not saying it very clearly, but you just get it one at a time. And it's fresh and it's new. So what are we bringing to the present moment that enables us not to live our lives 100% of the time? And you know I'm talking to myself much more than I'm talking to you. And so Ram Dass says, it's as if we are born into spacesuits that allow us to function on the plane. We spend many years learning how to operate the suit, and the superstructure of the suit is the ego. Most people forget that they were born into the suit, and that they are actually not the suit at all. Not any of the phenomena that we are working with. Thank you for being good listeners. Randy.